And a good Thursday to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's off and roaring on this Thursday. Beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick hanging out in East Nashville. Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue. And Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Outstanding. Outstanding. We got a great show today. Our Thursday lineup is top level. We're talking Murderers Row, Yankees, 1927.
Oh, yeah. We almost have a full lineup. I mean, a full nine, you know, so we're close. But yeah, I'm excited. This is a big show. Thursdays are already big, and we just added to it.
We will start our weekly with Paul Feinbaum in about 15 minutes. He's going to start joining us every Thursday at 10:15. Floyd Reese continues to join us Thursdays at 11 o'clock. We'll get into all things Titans with him. And, of course, silly underdog picks. Jonnu Smith at 11:30. Titans tied in. Silly underdog picks at high noon, which is always fun. And then Elliot Freeman at 1 o'clock. And then some news on the college basketball front. We'll head over to the campus of Belmont and talk to Casey Alexander. So there's a lot of stuff going on, including a topic we've been talking about a lot on this show that looks like the city of Nashville and Mayor Cooper has said the Titans can indeed start having fans at Nissan Stadium beginning in October with their first home game against the Steelers, their first home game in that month. Of course, they will be hosting the Jags this weekend at a limited capacity, but it looks like from one of just this is all just coming down here not too long ago, I guess, what, a 10%
yep.
capacity for the Steelers game, which is roughly around 7,000 fans in the lower bowl and club levels. And then after that, if things continue to get better or stay good, it'll increase to 12.5% for the next home game and then 15% and so forth and so on. So there you go.
21% will be the cap, it looks like, for the season. So Which is kind of in that range.
Still a little bit early to say that. I don't know why you would put that out and cap out the season. Haven't we learned not to do that? So a little surprised you'd go on and throw a cap number out there. But nonetheless, they did.
Well, it wasn't me. It was them.
No, I know. I understand that, too.
I just want to make sure the listeners know. No, why is McCabe on here doing that?
Why is he capping it? What is his problem? Yeah, why is he capping
it? Not me.
That? With that being said, though, I've got to be honest. I was extremely disturbed last night with the report that I saw on Fox 17 concerning the mayor's office and the Metro Health Department, kind of numbers they were keeping secret. It is not a good look for the mayor's office. Let's just say that. I don't know. I'm sure you guys have seen it by now, what Fox 17 put out there, but I was disappointed. Disappointed that was going on, and I'm more disappointed and more mad, not because it affected me, because I don't live in Davidson County and I don't work downtown. So I've got no skins in the game whatsoever. I think what bothered me the most is I know it's affected a lot of people, and it has affected their jobs, their job status, their paychecks, their income. In a lot of cases, it's affected their business. Like, some have not survived, or some are teetering on survival sitting here today in mid-September. And those are the people that I'm really angry for, because this is not a good look for the mayor's office. And I don't know what you guys think of it, but it was disturbing to me.
Well, I want to know more about it. I watched the feature. I think as we speak, or in the last half hour, there has been a press conference where the mayor has been asked more about this.
Yeah. Have you seen any answers? Because I have not. Have you seen any responses?
I haven't.
We are willing to release, asked about effort to withholding outbreak info on bars. Mayor Cooper says, roughly, we are willing to release any information, but just because those numbers weren't high at that time, during modified phase two formation doesn't mean it wasn't a national priority. And this is just, that's one little snippet. I'd like to hear the whole conversation. Yeah. Hopefully they'll put it all together and we'll learn more. Because I would think if the numbers were low, that's good news that you would want to share, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I would think. Right. Everybody should come to that conclusion.
And
yes.
If the numbers were bad, you would want to share those too. Like the numbers are the numbers. Right. I would hope that. So I would like to get a better explanation of what happened there.
Well, I'll be honest, Chase. Before you jump in there, I've heard the mayor do this a lot here of late, which I've never come out and said anything really hardcore one way or the other. But if you guys were reading between the lines, you could tell I have not been happy with John Cooper on how he's handled a variety of things in our city with what's been going on. And this certainly doesn't sit well with me. But I've heard him kind of use the national platform when asked questions. And my rebuttal to him would be, I don't give a damn what the national precedent. You're the mayor of Nashville. Tell us about our city, our market, the city that you're the mayor of. I don't care what the nation is doing. I want to know what Metro Nashville should be doing. Because he's even said that about Titans attendance. Well, everybody's focusing on the Titans home games, but there are other NFL teams. Well, I don't give a damn what other NFL teams are doing. Well, guess what? Other NFL teams are also having fans in the stands. I want you to concentrate on Nashville. That's where we live, and that's what people care about. Like, I'm kind of tired of the national narrative from the mayor. I need him to focus on the local aspect. I need him to focus on what he's the mayor of, and that's Nashville.
No, I agree with you on
that. There is a report that I was just passed this along at TennesseeLookout.com that, because there have been a few people in the media that said it's the story is you know, not the full picture. Look, I would encourage you to look at Nate Rao, who wrote for the Tennessean for a long time. He says they were reporting it at the time.
Back in August. He was on it back in August. Is that what you're reading?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who, Nate Rao is a very good reporter, a guy we've talked to over the years. He's a very good reporter.
Yep. Well, there is some news that actually came out, I guess, right before our show. That I happened to see, or right as our show started, but it's a little ironic that this story comes out, and then the mayor actually announced today Nashville bars moved to half capacity, can remain open until 11 o'clock now, after the latest numbers. So bars and limited service restaurants may open at 50% capacity, which those new restrictions will take effect tomorrow. Allow for up to 50 patrons per floor in Nashville's multi-level bars, including the popular honky-tonks along Lower Broadway. Outdoor spaces such as rooftop bars or patios will be open to up to 50 people or 50% capacity, whichever is lower. And again, bars and restaurants can remain open until 11 p.m. under the new rules.
I'm just looking a little further. Nate Rao tweets out, and he's got a story. I haven't had a chance to read the whole story, but he says it's not a revelation. The mayor's office didn't keep it a secret. We reported, this is TennesseeLookout.com, the number of cases from bars on August 4th. Bizarre and inaccurate story by Fox 17. So, you know.
That's coming from Nate Rao?
That's coming from Nate Rao.
Yeah. I know he asked the question back in August. I think that's what you were reading because I had seen that. I think what a lot of people are going to have a hard time with is it, you know, it looks like when you see the dialogue in the emails, you know, with not directly to the mayor, but the mayor's people, and this is not going to go public, right? This staying in house, right? I mean, that kind of reeks, you know, when you see dialogue like that going on behind the scenes of, hey, this is not going to be for public consumption, right? It immediately has people questioning, well, why are you trying to hide this from the public, whether it's fair or not?
No question.
People are going to jump to that conclusion immediately, and rightfully so. Like, why are you concerned on whether this is public or not? And, you know, his health people also saying, hey, how do you want me to address this? How do you want me to answer this? That's another thing that it will leave people going, you know, why? You're the health expert. I mean, shouldn't you know? I mean, what? It's almost like, are you being asked or are you being told what to say? I mean, people will jump to those conclusions too. So, yeah, you're right. There's a little bit deeper dive into this. And I know Nate Rao was on this back in August, but I think the problem that's concerning is just kind of the dialogue in that email, because people will jump to conclusions. And like I said, I think rightfully so. They have the right to have that opinion, because how could you think differently, really?
Yeah, and I believe that, you know, we as citizens have a right to know what's going on in our city. I don't think it's right for government to withhold that type of information at all. I mean, it's,
but Nate Rout is saying he reported it August,
well, no,
so
right,
nobody
right.
was paying attention in August, apparently, to his thing. I think overall the good news is we have gone from, I think, a concern around Memorial Day weekend that downtown was going to be a huge cluster of COVID cases to it's been managed pretty well. And I think the big picture, too, is the numbers. Like, we just got through Labor Day weekend, and there hasn't been another spike like there was maybe 4th of July, where we had to go from phase three back to phase two. So we're overall moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's the good news.
And I
agree with all of it, because when you read that email and you look at that report, you definitely have to do a double take and say, wait a minute now, what's the motivation here? What's going on? Why wouldn't you want to say what I would interpret as good news, that you don't have a big cluster of cases downtown?
Yeah, and he did announce today, October 1st, we will return to phase three. So
that's good news.
A lot of that coming out. So the some stuff goes into effect tomorrow, and then phase three, October 1st.
All in all, with all that being said, it is good news that things are opening up a little bit more downtown for the bars and restaurants who have been hit hard. And more importantly, also on the Titan side, you know, that they can start be at least given the opportunity to have fans in the stands and do this the right way. And now hopefully, fingers crossed, that everything will go off and without a hitch, and everything will be good, and the numbers, the percentages will keep increasing, and more fans can be allowed in. You know, that's the hope. But I'm just glad that they're getting a chance to at least be able to try to pull it off. That's all I've asked. Give them a chance.
I hope Nashville SC is afforded the same.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, that's one thing I thought of, Chase. The other thing is, and this is another sensitive topic, but Metro schools. How does this affect this good news, this trend we're having? Does that have people saying, okay, is it time to start letting those kids play?
Well, the announcement was Friday, September 25th. They will start being able to play games.
Well, good. I'd miss that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if we said all that. That was a lot to digest in the first 13
minutes. If you said it, I missed that.
No, I didn't say it. I wasn't sure if somebody else said it.
No, that was – I know that was rumor.
Public schools, Metro Nashville can start playing football games next Friday. So next Friday, they can start playing games.
All right.
This is awesome. It's a good morning.
That's good.
It is. All right.
I feel better about things.
Ready, break. We'll end on a high note. That's a first down. First
George
Costanza,
the George Costanza school of the first segment.
First
end on a high note.
Down, Titans.
No, it would be first down, good? Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Well, I was trying to.
Yeah, I know what you're doing.
I was trying to be the Duke.
Can you do it that way?
What?
Do that. Do first down, Darren, Donick, and Chase.
First down, DDC.
There we go. All right, we'll come back. Paul Feinbaum, he joins us every Thursday at 10:15, that starts today, and we'll talk to him on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
All them dogs are counting down, about to put the anchor down.
Well, you know what that music means. It's time for the Paul Feinbaum Show. Well, that's coming up at 2 o'clock. You can hear that on 94.9. But he now joins us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, and that'll be happening every Thursday at this time, and we're excited about that. Paul, how you doing?
Guy, thank you, man. I heard that music, and I thought, man, I'm late for work. But thanks for having me on. It's a great pleasure to be with you guys, always.
Well, we appreciate it, and we're excited here because things are moving in the right direction in Nashville. Metro Nashville High School football is going to be able to start playing again next Friday. The Titans, starting in October, will start being able to house fans at a certain capacity. Bars and restaurants are starting to open up more, so good things moving in the right direction here as we move into the fall. And that's the case with the big news yesterday with the Big Ten. What did you make of how that whole thing was handled? And yeah, in the end, they're going to try to get this thing going and try to squeeze in there with the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 and be a part of the playoff system. But what about the whole, how it all played out? What did you think?
Well, I think the Big Ten kept trying to defend itself and realized that nobody bought it, nobody was listening, and And besides, football was going on everywhere else. And you mentioned high school in Tennessee, but it was also going on in Pennsylvania and Ohio and in Michigan. And I think what really put it over the wall on Saturday was the fact that Notre Dame, in Indiana, Big Ten country, you know, had a football game against Duke. Iowa State played, and I think they suddenly decided to go, you know what, man, the hell, that the science is much better today than it was on August 11th. Is anyone supposed to believe that? No, but it really doesn't matter. They made the wrong decision on August 11th. It was premature, and I think they made the right decision yesterday. We all know nothing is going to be normal this year, and we all know that things can pause and change. Why not give it a shot?
I had a buddy of mine who is in with a lot of – it's part of his job. He has to cover the Big Ten, and he has been telling me for months – well, since really, I guess, the last 6 weeks, let's say. Paul, I know what college football has been playing for the last 3 weeks. About the last 5-6 weeks, and I've been talking about it on the show, like he talks to these Big Ten coaches. He has relationships with them, whether it's the head coach or people on their staff, and he's been telling me they are all saying we're going to play in the fall. Like, it's going to happen. And I was like, why are they saying that? They have been planning to play in the fall. I wonder why the coaches felt so good for them to keep kind of going behind the scenes, that they felt like this day was coming and they were going to get the opportunity to play in the fall. What is your best guess on why Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh and these other coaches, James Franklin, were all still planning like they were going to, you know, play this fall?
I think a couple of things. They looked around the country and saw everyone else playing, and you know, I think they did it twofold. They were trying to keep their own players on board without seeing a few of them opt out, which they did. And I think a recruiting issue was also at hand. I interviewed Jeff Brohm yesterday from Purdue, and he admitted very candidly that had we not played this fall, meaning the Big Ten, they were going to get battered in recruiting. Remember, this is not the normal February, first Wednesday in February recruiting calendar. Recruiting now starts in December, so you better be busy now. And they were sensing that. Maybe you know, Ohio State probably wasn't going to be as affected, but so that was that incentive. And I think they also felt like maybe the Big Ten had never given a really good explanation. And if you're going to make a monumental decision of this sort, explain it. The Pac-12, interestingly, did explain it, and most everyone bought it. They presented science in a different way than the Big Ten. The Big Ten just expected everyone to believe that they were all on the same page. And, you know, Nebraska started it, but Nebraska isn't influential enough to really affect the Big Ten hierarchy. Ohio State is. And I think, you know, the combination of Harbaugh, James Franklin was very influential. But Ryan Day was the one that I think put it over the top. He kept pushing. And remember, it was about a week or so ago when he issued that blistering post on Twitter that really went right after the Big Ten commissioner. And he has been a failure in all of this. Kevin Warren, in the job a year, taking over for Jim Delaney, a legendary commissioner, who, by the way, is living in Nashville, probably listening right now. And he tried so hard to be the smartest guy in the room when he was with his other colleagues, and he ended up making the worst decision I have seen in college athletics in a long time.
We're speaking with Paul Feinbaum. He's brought to you every Thursday at this time by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. All right, with that being said, the Pac-12 is on the clock. Larry Scott is on the clock. What do you anticipate the Pac-12 doing next?
They are on a different they're living in a different universe than the rest of us. And I say that because they have far stricter guidelines. And, you know, I'll try not to even include the tragedy of the wildfires, which is complicating things. But, you know, the ordinances out there are different. And I know what the governor of Oregon and California said yesterday, but it's not easy. And they are way behind. The Big Ten is barely going to be able to pull this off starting October 24th. the Pac-12 is still talking about it. So every hour that goes by means how are they going to be able to get ready by then? And the reason why late October is critical, if you're not playing by late October, you're not getting in the college football playoff. And I'm sure some guy at the end of a bar downtown is saying, well, they're not going to the playoff anyway. Well, you're right. They are not probably going to the playoff anyway. So there's less of a concern. But if they don't come back, even getting six or seven games in starting in November, the Pac-12 becomes even more irrelevant. And I know that sounds like it's redundant, but I'm just trying to characterize their situation.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum, his first of a weekly visit with us every Thursday at this time, and he's brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. So, Paul, let's look a little closer at the SEC. We know around the league every school is dealing with the hurdles that come with this and doing the best they can. But what did you make of Ed Orgeron's a little oversharing in a lot of people's minds, saying, hey, basically most of our guys have had it by now?
You know, I've heard other coaches say that. They just didn't say it publicly and on network television. Because how coaches view this and how maybe the average person views it are two different things. Coaches have seen countless players get it, and I know they're probably not rooting for it, although from a competitive standpoint, they probably are. And Orgeron just told the truth. I bet if you got a true reading from the SEC schools, the numbers would be, well, they wouldn't be staggering anymore. I mean, Orgeron already said it, but I've heard numbers all summer at various places that are equal or more than what he said. And that's why the season may go off fairly well, because they're, unfortunately, and I say this unfortunately because I wouldn't wish this on anyone, whether you come out of it well or not, there may not be many players left to get it.
Yeah, I guess, Paul, that's the double-edged sword, because in the vast majority of cases, you know, I guess guys get it, they get through it, and they move on. And hopefully, as Ed Orgeron said, you've got at least 3 months, maybe more, you're less likely to get it again. Everything's fine with that as long as there's no lasting effects. Or, you know, I've heard, you know, individual cases where somebody gets it, they are sick, and it just takes them a while to really feel 100%. That's what, I guess, in the weeds of all this, we don't really know about what each individual is feeling when they go through that process of, I guess, for lack of a better term, let's use herd immunity.
Yeah, that is the danger. And I, again, I'm married to a physician who has her degree from Vanderbilt. So, I mean, I hear the other side of it all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's why you just shouldn't go out and get it so you can get past it. Because you don't know how it's going to affect you. Yeah, and yeah, everyone so far has been good, but all it takes is one. It takes that one player with the underlying condition that no one maybe knew about or saw, and that can happen a lot, that kills the whole thing for everybody, and maybe, unfortunately, himself. So I don't think it's a great thing to get it just and then get past it, because I have talked to some players who have had it, and they admit it may cost them a little bit in speed, and it may not even affect them now. But let's say you have a top five wide receiver who gets it next year at the combine. That millimeter of a second could be all the difference in the world between a first round and not being drafted. So I think it's cavalier of coaches to talk like that, but it's also the reality. Coaches are looking at their roster and trying to figure out how do we get ready for the next game and whatever else happens. Where the duplicity and the just the far the absolute farce of the sport comes in is on the other side, when you get administrators talk about, you know, we're doing everything we can to protect the players and we're putting in, you know, 18 safeguards and protocol, and then you hear Orgeron say, well, pretty much everybody's already got it.
That was pretty interesting. So, Paul, I heard the discussion on Get Up this morning that you were a part of. What's interesting is in the chaos that we get on some level most years with determining who should be in the playoff, can you imagine if, you know, as we've seen so far, there's some games that have to get postponed, may or may not get made up. So let's say Ohio State is sitting there at, let's just throw 7-0 out there and being evaluated up against a team from a different league, maybe the SEC championship game loser that's you know, 8-1 or 9-1. That is even more complicated than normal.
Yeah, it's a real problem if you the total number doesn't matter, because, and really it shouldn't anyway. But you know, this year, you know somebody can say, well, they're only 6-0. But if Ohio State, goes to Penn State and wins and beats Michigan and whoever else is on their schedule, we're not sure about on the other side. You measure that against, let's say, Georgia with two losses, and maybe they're both against Alabama, who's number two in the country or number one in the country. That's when it gets complicated. But yeah, it's a subjective panel that we deal with. I mean, I've always felt the College Football Playoff Committee was the easiest job in America, that you could go down on Broadway and grab 10 guys in a bar, seven beers in, and they could do just as good a job. Because it's really, I think in the history of the playoffs since 2014, there's been one or two close calls. Ohio State got in the first year. Maybe they shouldn't have, and they rewarded the committee by winning it all. And then there was a little bit of a debate between Alabama and Ohio State another year. But for the most part, it's self-explanatory. This year is going to be that outlier. And yeah, I mean, am I happy about it? Sure. You guys happy about it? Sure. I mean, we have talk shows where that becomes a very big topic of conversation. If you're talking about the NFL, there's not much debate. I mean, you get in by winning or losing games. In college football, it's a beauty contest.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum of the SEC Network and ESPN. He's going to join us every Thursday at 10:15, brought to you by mtgrt.com. So, Paul, let's actually talk about some of these teams and what they're going to look like once they start play next weekend. What's your confidence level in Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin in year one with him?
It's not particularly high, and that's not based on Lane, who I think is a really good coach. It's just, the last time we saw that team, they were pretty average to mediocre, and they have two quarterbacks, and they have you can say this about everyone in the SEC. They're going to have a hard schedule. Some schedules are more difficult than others, but I think they'll have a very sloppy year. And he did not have a great first year in recruiting because of when he got in, but I think ultimately Lane Kiffin will improve that product very much.
So you feel like that hire is going to work, and I'm not necessarily, when I say work, I don't necessarily mean he's competing against Saban and Alabama every year for the SEC West title. We know how loaded the SEC West is, but you think that he's the right guy to turn that program around?
Yeah, I think he's a step up from where they were. Now, remember, they had an interim coach for a couple of years in Matt Luke. They just gave him the title, but it felt interim, and that program has not been anywhere near where it was under Hugh Freeze, but there was also quite a cloud that followed Hugh Freeze around. I still think the neighborhood that Ole Miss lives in, what I mean by that is the West, is just so difficult. And he needs he may have that player and a quarterback, but he needs a couple of recruiting classes before I think he can be competitive. He does have a very good staff. His defensive coordinator came from Maryland, where he lost his job there. And so I think that helps. I mean, Ole Miss's problem really the last couple of years has been defense.
Now, that first week, next weekend, they'll take on Florida and Dan Mullen. And Florida is a team that everybody expects they're going to compete against Georgia for the SEC East. How do you view Florida? Do you think that this is a year where they take another step forward?
I'm still leaning a little toward Georgia, but I am perplexed by the Georgia quarterback situation, having lost Jamie Newman and not being 100% clear on JT Daniels, the transfer from SC's medical condition. But I think it's kind of, and this is a cliche, but it will come down to the Florida-Georgia winner. As it always does, but I still think Georgia has recruited so well in recent years. Florida is a little bit behind them from a roster standpoint. Now that is, unless you talk to a Florida fan.
When somebody asks you the question of, okay, the dark horse in the SEC, how would you answer that?
I think Texas A&M has a chance to be very good. Their schedule got a little bit more difficult because, once again, they have Florida on the schedule. I don't think Tennessee would be a shocking dark horse, but I really feel good about the Vols. I talked to Jeremy Pruitt yesterday. Not that he ever really gives you the feeling that things are okay, but that's just his nature as a hard-nosed football coach. But I like the state of that program overall, in spite of the COVID issues that they've been dealing with. So I mean, I think I would probably go with one, Tennessee from the East and A&M from the West. But the thing about this schedule, though, with 10 games, you have to avoid a bad start, because you get off 0-1, 0-2, and I think the challenge of coaches this year will be to keep their players focused. I know that they'll all say the cliche, though, we're hungry, but this has been a long build-up, and if you're suddenly spinning out of control early, and I'm talking to you, Vanderbilt, you could be in for a rough finish.
Yeah, you mentioned Jeremy Pruitt, who you talked to yesterday, and you've been able to talk to him quite a bit over the years since he's been at Tennessee. What is the biggest change you've seen from him from, let's say, last year when we were having conversations on our show, Paul, of is he going to make it through the season at the start of last year? But what changes have you seen between now and then?
I think while we were having those conversations, and I think they were certainly legitimate because he looked absolutely clueless early on, the administration there decided to dig in. I remember being in Knoxville last year for the Georgia game, and they had lost the first two games of the year and looked just terrible. Then they lost to Florida, and it felt like it was coming apart. And I was talking to some people, to people close to the administration, and they said, we are behind him. We have to be. We've made this mistake before. I think that's where Philip Fulmer comes in, someone who understands the landscape and their key people in that town who said we have to stand by him. They did, and you can look at the schedule last year and there were a lot of pretty sloppy wins, and even the bowl win which propelled them into the offseason with momentum. I mean, it wasn't all that impressive when you consider the opponent, but I think Pruitt won the fan base back over again. He had the power brokers, but he didn't have the fans. And now I think he has everyone, but he just has to follow through. I think it's the first game against South Carolina, a place that I think they've won one time in 10 years, which was the last time, is a tricky game. If you lose, let's just say you lose that opener, which is certainly possible, you still have to deal with Auburn and Alabama and Georgia and Florida, and suddenly compress the season. There's not a lot of time to make that up. If you have one loss after the first weekend and you've got those other games ahead, you're going to have to upset somebody to really have anything close to a decent season.
No doubt about it. It'll be fun starting next weekend. Paul, really appreciate the visit. We're looking forward to Thursdays with you at this time. Thanks for doing this. Have a great show today.
Guys, thank you. Always enjoy it. See you next week.
All right, that is Paul Feinbaum. His show starting at 2 o'clock today on 94.9. And every week on our show, he's going to be brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. We'll talk about some things you just heard there on the college football landscape. We'll do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, it's a real problem if the total number doesn't matter, because – and really, it shouldn't anyway. But this year, somebody would say, "Well, they're only 6-0." But if Ohio State, goes to Penn State and wins and beats Michigan and whoever else is on their schedule, we're not sure about on the other side. You measure that against, let's say, Georgia with two losses, and maybe they're both against Alabama, who's number two in the country or number one in the country. That's when it gets complicated. But it's a subjective panel that we deal with. I mean, I've always felt the College Football Playoff Committee was the easiest job in America, that you could go down on Broadway and grab 10 guys in a bar, seven beers in, and they could do just as good a job. Because it's really, I think in the history of the playoffs since 2014, there's been one or two close calls. Ohio State got in the first year. Maybe they shouldn't have, and they rewarded the committee by winning it all. And then there was a little bit of a debate between Alabama and Ohio State another year. But for the most part, it's self-explanatory. This year is going to be that outlier. And, yeah, I mean, am I happy about it? Sure. You guys happy about it? Sure. I mean, we have talk shows where, that becomes a very big topic of conversation. If you're talking about the NFL, there's not much debate. I mean, you get in by winning or losing games. In college football, it's a beauty contest.
So how's that beauty contest going to work if Ohio State plays seven games, Penn State plays eight games, Georgia plays nine, Alabama plays eight, Florida plays 10. How are they going to do all that? How are they going to decide a one-loss team compared to a team that maybe was just 7-0, but really impressive? But it's like the other team was 8-1. Yeah, you know, how
or
are
even
you going to do
two,
that?
Or like two brutal losses, losses against really good teams. It could be very complicated. Do you factor in too that the Big Ten sort of did this to themselves? If they're saying, well, if we'd have played more games, our team would be 8-0. And plus, you also have only conference games, so you're not going to be able to see what conference looks good up against another conference in a lot of cases, right?
Right. Yeah, well, I think it's more than eight. I think they needed to play more like 10 like everybody else, but it's eight is the best they can do. And what if they're only playing – what if somebody only plays seven? That's what I'm saying. I mean, what if an Ohio State has seven blowout impressive wins, but they're 7-0, and Georgia goes 8-1 in their losses to Florida in overtime?
I think another factor that comes to mind for me is – this is probably a great year for the reputation to carry you. Like Ohio State, everybody is saying the same thing. Oh, they're really good. Hey, Ohio State's really good. Well, we don't know until they play the games. And when you're only playing in your league, let's say they do run the table. How do we know that the rest of the Big Ten isn't just bad?
Right.
Let me ask you guys this. At this point, this can't happen, but in the spirit of the conversation of, all right, if they had all gotten together sooner and been on the same page, would this have been the year that if they're going to have four in the playoff that you just say, hey, I know it's not the best system, it's not completely fair, but the fairest we can make it is the champion of each league represents that league in the playoff?
I don't think they'll do that. I've always valued the conference championship more than a lot of people, and I think if they did that, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, but I don't think they're going to turn over a new leaf this year.
No,
because
it's off
a la
the
baseball.
It's
baseball
off the
did. Baseball took the opportunity to try something different because of the circumstances. I just don't see it happening here.
Yeah, and that's not what I'm asking. If that had been, I think it's too late to do that. Games have already started. You've kind of made your bed. But if that had been the plan, would you guys have been cool with it? That's what I'm asking.
I'd been all right with it.
Well, I'd be all right with it because it's probably going to play. It's probably, once again, probably, don't know. I was going to say, well, you can go on and say Clemson. I don't even know, ACC, I don't even know why you're playing. Clemson, congratulations. Big 12, I don't know why you're playing. Congratulations, Oklahoma. But I guess you could maybe say that about the Big Ten. I mean, it does look like Ohio State is loaded, but we don't know. But it would seem like – and it's probably going to play out that way anyway. But I just kind of feel like – I mean, after seeing, last weekend in the Big 12, does anybody think anybody's got a shot at making any noise other than Oklahoma, who, was still – it's still way too early. But, boy. And the ACC, same deal.
But you just don't know, or you're not going to know. You don't have as many of the one conference versus another across the board to really look. You have a limited amount anyway most years, but now you have virtually none. And now, the Big 12 has really shot itself in the foot because the few non-conference games they're playing, they haven't looked good. Some of their teams, that's only going to look bad in terms of the depth of their league, right? It's going to have the reputation, say, well, the Big 12 must be pretty weak because they lost a couple of games early to non-conference teams to the Sun Belt.
Yeah.
I wonder what it would look like if they went to that formula. Now, you know, that's on the premise that the Pac-12 just can't get it together because you only have four teams. But if they went to that formula or and, you know, you basically have the conference championships as your quarterfinal, I guess it would be. But I'd sign up for that, get rid of divisions, just have the top two teams of each conference play in the conference championship game, call it a day. But
have the Notre Dame thing complicating it because they are in the ACC. The only thing that would be a problem, Chase, is if a team ran the table from outside one of those leagues.
Right. Like, what if Notre Dame and Clemson, do they play each other?
Yeah, they do.
Well,
they do.
Don't they have a conference championship game where they could, in theory, play each other?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess they would have to meet. You're right, at some point. Okay. Yeah, what if they both went?
It's up to each league to crown their champion, whoever that league, you know, however you decide to crown the champion.
Yeah,
that's
November 7th, Clemson at Notre Dame.
Mm, okay.
So, they in theory, they could play twice? Is that is that possible?
I don't
know. Which division is Notre Dame in?
I haven't looked at the break.
The Coastal division or the whatever the other one is called?
I mean, here's the thing. I don't know the answer. Can Notre Dame actually play in the ACC championship game? Or are they officially a member? Or are they just playing the ACC schedule?
I can't imagine why they would enter in to a league where they weren't allowed to play for
standings,
a championship.
It doesn't have them broken up for the ACC.
In divisions?
Yeah, Big Ten, it has them broken up, SEC, Conference USA, but it doesn't have them broken up in the ACC. It's just got them all lumped together.
NCAA.com, Notre Dame is eligible for the ACC championship game.
Okay.
So it's unfair at times to some teams some years, and now there's even more of a chance that it'll be unfair to somebody.
Yeah, I mean,
like who would it be? There could be a team outside of the Big Four leagues. Let's say I think the Pac-12 has no choice but to play at some point. Now, Larry Scott did an interview where he was hopeful. You know, he's saying we want to play. We think we can play. We just got to get to this. It's complicated, but I think they'll get there.
He seemed to want to blame a lot on the cities and states. That was the interview. You talking about the interview with Neil Levert? Is that the interview you're talking about?
They played a clip of it on SportsCenter.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was with Neil Levert.
That's probably true.
He seemed to want to – my take was he was basically like, it's out of my hands. Don't blame me. It's all up to the city officials and state officials. And he kind of wanted to push all that to the communities.
Don't you think there'll be renewed momentum, though, from everybody that wants to play – to say, look, everybody else is playing. Why can't we play?
Of course. I mean, it's the reason we're doing. Why do you think the Big Ten has done an about face? I mean, of course. It's what we've talked. By the way, Paul Feinbaum just reiterated what we've been saying. I mean, from the get go, how would you like to be Ohio State sitting there with what everybody is claiming on paper is a loaded team, and you're not allowed to play according to your conference? And yet you go around the city of Columbus and they're playing high school football on Friday night. Like that, how do you think that would sit with everybody in Columbus? That was happening, by the way. You know, I mean, you just – of course that pressure is there. It should be. It's the same with Metro Nashville here. We've been saying, how can you say it, they can't do it when everybody else is doing it? Of course that pressure plays a factor in all this. And there's other reasons – the college level, as we've stated, money. But, of course, the pressure of everybody else playing is there. And now the Pac-12, who acted like they had no intentions whatsoever of playing in the fall, now they're going to come around. And my guess is, yeah, they probably will try to find a way to squeeze into this thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame them if they did. Somebody on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, said that there are no ACC divisions. So that's
no divisions. So how do they determine? Is
it a top two
championship game?
It's the top two teams. The number two. Yeah.
Is it? It's always been that way.
No, it hasn't always been that way. No, just this year.
Oh, okay.
They did that for this year. But I wish they'd do that. I would prefer that. Yeah, I think
you have a division. Mess sometimes figuring out who the top two are. We've seen that before. Well,
really?
Sometimes. What if you have a three-way tie? And some
but
teams
I think
haven't
it's
played
a,
each other.
The big. I mean, the ACC in particular has had the mess of the 6-6 team going to the championship game, and we're like,
right.
Really?
That's been a problem.
Yeah, a 28.5-point underdog in your conference championship game? Oh, wow. That's high drama. Like, we've seen that, right? Georgia Tech, Duke, nothing against them, but, I mean, we've seen teams get in there because that side of the bracket was really weak, and they get in with a 7-5 record or even 8-4, and they're a four-touchdown underdog in your conference championship game.
Well, that brings up a potential thing for confusion or chaos, whatever word you like to use. And Paul brought it up in the SEC, but let's take the ACC. Clemson runs the table, and during that time they beat Notre Dame in the regular season. Let's say it's a really good game. Notre Dame finishes second. That's their only loss. And then they play again in the championship game and lose to Clemson again. So Notre Dame's undefeated. Except for two losses, and let's say they play two really good games, two losses against a team that we all know is one of the top one or two teams in the league, in the country. That's an interesting profile, right? Let's say I don't know what that would make their record, 8-2.
Well, the ACC is playing a 10+1, aren't they? Aren't they playing 11?
I guess they have time to because they started early enough.
Yeah.
All right, so whatever it is, let's say 9-2, and those are the only two losses to Clemson. Paul mentioned Georgia. Let's say Georgia loses twice to Alabama. Same thing. They beat everybody else. And you put that up against a Big Ten team that's played less games, that's a really interesting debate.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no conference versus conference
right.
games to go on. Right? Well, the Big 12 is not as good, or the Big Ten isn't as good, because look at these games. You don't have those games.
Yeah, and I lost to like a Notre Dame loss to Clemson is going to be a completely different story than, you know, a loss in the Big Ten to Rutgers or something. I mean, obviously that's going to hurt you if something like that happened. But yeah, I see what you're saying, and this is why I'll use the cop out answer of I don't envy the committee at all. I'm glad I'm not on it, and I can just sit here on the radio and tell them that they're wrong.
Why? I'd love to be on it and then come report to you guys.
Well, we'll let you. We'll designate you. We'll designate you as our Darren Donovan Chase correspondent to the playoff committee, where you can vote on it. But
I would love to be in those rooms.
I could see you being good at that too, because you'd argue. there'd be a lot of arms flailing and standing up and saying, you know, you got to pull the ripcord on them.
Pull the Band-Aid off. Yeah. No, I'd love to be in there, and I would come back and report everything. It would be great. Then they'd boot me off.
Like, you're out.
McFarland, we can't have you telling what's going on in the room. I would love that stuff. I've always wanted to be a juror, but nobody's ever going to pick me in there. They don't want me in there, in that room.
No.
They're always sending me home. We'll come back and start the second hour with Floyd Reese. We'll get into all things Titans. Don't forget Silly Underdog Picks. It's back. We want you playing along with us, speaking of college football, which we were just talking about, and the NFL, which we're about to talk about. Get your friends, get your family, get your coworkers, your neighbors, get everybody to play along as a group. You get to make three selections every single week, any combination of college football or the NFL. Do what you like. This week's prize will be a $25 Party Foul gift card, and all you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com or ESPN The Game Nashville mobile app, sign up, and make your picks today. We will make our picks. We will review and make our picks at high noon. Floyd Reese to kick off the second hour of Darren Donovan Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.